Good morning. It's Monday, April 8th. I'm Yasmin Khan, in for Shamita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, we reflect on the 6 months of war between Israel and Hamas. Legal cannabis shops have too much cash on hand and too few banks who'll take it. And how South Carolina took down Caitlin Clark. But first, today is the day when people from northern Mexico to southeastern Canada will get the rare chance to experience a total solar eclipse. That's when our view of the sun is completely blocked by the moon. Now, to be clear, total solar eclipses happen every 18 months or so, but they're sometimes in far-flung places, like the middle of the ocean, where no one sees them. But today, a host of cities are right in the path of the total eclipse, giving tens of millions of people the chance to witness it. That's why there's so much excitement and preparation.
We have been planning for this for 18 months.
Catherine Garcia is the director of operations for New York State. Buffalo and Rochester are cities that will experience the total eclipse, and they're expecting an influx of visitors.
We are prepared for problems in areas around transportation or cell service, or goodness gracious, what's going to happen if there are not enough bathrooms on the thruway.
From Dallas to Indianapolis to Cleveland, there will be watch parties in public parks and people's backyards. Hotels are full, and restaurants have special menus with eclipse-themed foods, like the chocolate totality ice cream sandwich that's at a restaurant in Little Rock. In total, it's all projected to add a whopping $6 billion to the U.S. economy, putting this cosmic event in line with Taylor Swift's Eras Tour. The University of Vermont in Burlington is even canceling classes today in favor of seminars, live performances, and yes, gazing up at the sky. Physics lecturer John Perry told a local ABC affiliate that telescopes will, of course, be fitted with special solar lenses.
We want the students to get out there and do active learning if they can and really talk to people and see what's going on.
And what if you don't live in the path of totality, as it's called? You'll get a partial eclipse. I used a tool from the Washington Post to see that where I am in Brooklyn, the sun will be about 90% obscured. And whether you're looking up at a partial eclipse or a total one, never, ever look at the sun directly without eclipse glasses. NASA also warns not to look at the eclipse through a camera lens, iPhone, binoculars, or telescope, even while wearing eclipse glasses. And no, piling on multiple pairs of sunglasses is not enough to protect our eyes. Now to the Middle East. Yesterday marked 6 months since Hamas fighters raided southern Israel, killing about 1,200 people and taking hundreds hostage. In response, Israel vowed to, quote, crush and destroy Hamas and to bring all the hostages home. In the months since, at least 33,000 Palestinians have been killed. Much of Gaza has been turned to rubble, and more than 100 Israeli hostages still remain in captivity. NPR's Daniel Estrin is based in Tel Aviv. He told NPR that 6 months in, Israelis and Palestinians still see the war very differently.
I was driving in Tel Aviv as our producer in Gaza sent over some sound that he recorded of a mother wailing over her child who was killed. And while I was driving, I saw an Israeli driving on his motorcycle with a bumper sticker on it that said, "Go IDF, go Israeli Army." And I think that just encapsulates the two worlds that Israelis and Palestinians live in now.
He says in Israel, the war is not being reported on in the same ways it is outside the country, and that Israelis will never forget or forgive the events of October 7th.
Israelis speak about it also as a second Holocaust because of the atrocities committed. Israelis hiding at home in their closets, burned alive, shot and killed in a field at a music festival, corpses decapitated, mutilated, hostages captured. And it, I think, explains how Israelis have responded since.
Israel's nonstop bombardment has left Gaza decimated and its own troops exhausted. Just yesterday, Israel announced it was withdrawing forces from the city of Khan Yunis in southern Gaza in order to recuperate. The military said its operations in the enclave were still far from over. Meanwhile, many of the thousands of people killed in Gaza are women and children. There are countless stories of whole families being wiped out, children left with no parents, victims losing limbs and suffering burns. Here's Amber Alayan, one of the deputy program managers for Doctors Without Borders, on how dire conditions have become in hospitals.
No healthcare system in the world can cope with the volume of injuries and the types of injuries and the medical conditions that we're seeing on a day-to-day basis in Gaza. The wounds that these patients are suffering are beginning to literally rot. They smell now. The microbiology system, the lab system to Gaza has been totally taken out. It's completely non-functional. We can't even figure out what we're treating in terms of the infections.
People are starving, with Oxfam reporting that 300,000 people trapped in the north have lived for weeks now on an average of 245 calories a day. A case before the United Nations highest court accuses Israel of committing genocide, an allegation the country strongly denies. Just before the weekend, President Biden warned Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that if Israel doesn't do more to minimize civilian harm, it could risk losing U.S. support. And yesterday, Israel and Hamas sent delegations to Cairo again to restart ceasefire negotiations. The legal cannabis industry in the United States is drowning in cash. Weed shops across the country, which are licensed by individual states, are making huge profits, but many banks still refuse to do business with them as long as the drug remains classified as a Schedule I substance at the federal level. Major credit card companies, including Visa and MasterCard, also don't process marijuana-related transactions.
You'd think that we're talking about people operating illicit businesses that are all in cash because they're trying to hide from the law, whereas actually these guys are trying to run a fully above-the-board business and aren't able to because the banking system refuses to work with them.
That's Alexander Saidi, who covers banking for the Wall Street Journal. He wrote about this problem and the hardships that come when you're sitting on hundreds of thousands of bills that you can't deposit. According to Treasury data reviewed by the Wall Street Journal, banks closed down nearly 8,000 accounts related to marijuana businesses last year. That's what happened to Tahir Johnson. He won a license to open a dispensary in New Jersey.
And he, while in the fundraising process, got a sudden account closure notice from Bank of America. And not only did they close the corporate account he had opened for fundraising purposes, they also closed a personal account he had at the bank without explaining why. So this guy just got debanked for, you know, doing something that the state government licensed him to do.
Johnson found a different remote bank. And when he has to deposit cash, he does so with an armored truck at his own expense. Lawmakers in the House have passed a bipartisan bill 7 times in the last 5 years that would make it easier for marijuana stores to work with banks. The Senate has never voted on it, but is expected to this year. Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley is the bill's author. He told the Journal that he decided to champion the issue after traveling with the CEO of one cannabis company who was trying to pay his taxes. He and other business owners had to pass through multiple police checks in order to hand deliver millions of dollars in cash at the state capitol. Finally, the South Carolina Gamecocks are national champions after defeating Iowa 87-75 in the women's NCAA final on Sunday. This is the moment the team clinched their third national championship and capped an undefeated season.
Perfection with a touch of sweet redemption. Undefeated South Carolina has won its third national championship.
The woman at the center of the victory is South Carolina coach Dawn Staley. A former WNBA player, Staley is credited for taking the Gamecocks from a mediocre team to the best collegiate team in the nation. She's also the first Black coach to win 3 Division I titles. On the other side of the court, it was the final college career game for Hawkeyes star Caitlin Clark, who broke Division I scoring records for both women and men. She now heads to the WNBA draft. Coach Staley tipped her hat to Clark during the trophy ceremony.
I want to personally thank Caitlin Clark for lifting up our sport. She carried a heavy load for our sport, and it just is not going to stop here on the collegiate tour. But when she is the number one pick in the WNBA draft, she's going to lift that league up as well. So, Caitlin Clark, if you're out there, you are one of the GOATs of our games. We appreciate you.
For some perspective on that, Iowa's game against UConn in the women's semifinal was the most watched basketball game on ESPN, collegiate or pro, ever. Tonight, it's the men's final. The UConn Huskies take on the Purdue Boilermakers for the championship title. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you're already listening in the news app right now, we've got a narrated article coming up next. The Los Angeles Times goes inside allegations against reality TV producer Andy Cohen. The producer behind the hit franchise The Real Housewives faces a slew of accusations and lawsuits from former cast members. If you're listening in the podcasts app, follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.